appreciate certainly what you're doing in the States. And for our audience who hears our own medical officials here and obviously all the different provinces in Canada have sort of approached this as they've approached this. We read so much about New York being the center right now of this pandemic. I know a couple days ago, in addition to sort of your research, you put in a 13-hour day at an NYU hospital. And I wonder if you can just give our audience just a sense of what you saw literally on the ground of this.
So I was actually at Bellevue Hospital. So all of the doctors who work at Bellevue are on faculty at the NYU School of Medicine. So there's a lot of back and forth, at least at the doctor level, between the two facilities. It was Sunday. And I have to say, like, just heading over there, so I walked over so that across Manhattan from the west side to the east side, Grant actually walked me over. I was trying to avoid basically public transportation and cars so as to avoid exposure. The streets are pretty empty. It was really quiet. And then said goodbye to Grant out in front of the hospital, went inside. The lobby was totally empty, which is really unusual. Usually you have a lot of people milling around, doing different things. There's an au bon pain in the lobby where people might be having a coffee or, a meal. And you have to go through now this screening process as you walk in the door, where they ask you if you're having any symptoms. They check your temperature. My temperature was actually low because it was cold outside and I had just walked some, 20, 30 minutes across town to get there. Walked on through the lobby to the other end of the hospital. Really very few people walking around, which was, sort of striking again. Sort of eerie feeling. Headed upstairs to the medicine wards. Met up with one of my colleagues who had done the night shift, and so we sign out patients when we're doing a transition in care. She signed out what had happened over her shift as we were picking up. It was sort of a blur, to be honest, to hear about it, because basically every single patient was fever, cough, shortness of breath. And so usually you can kind of like, there's some sort of aspect of the story that kind of helps you remember, oh, that person. But honestly, they all sounded the same, getting sign out on everyone. Then just being on the wards was also, again, sort of, it was sort of like a ghost town where a lot of the people that are normally around, not that they're not there, I think they're just more keeping to their corners, so to speak. And that's the nurses, you have the doctors, you have social workers, you have, phlebotomists, people delivering meal trays, you have all of those different kinds of staff. But it just felt like everybody was sort of in their corners, doing their thing, not really interacting very much. Patients were all in their rooms, not supposed to come out. A lot of times you have patients that will come out and sort of walk around the hall, or they might be at the nurse's station, asking the nurses something, or, but that was, everybody was really in their corners. So that was really striking. And then the only thing that really punctuated that quiet was every hour or so you would get an overhead page about, respiratory distress, a code basically being called that somebody was in respiratory distress, they were short of breath, their oxygen levels had dropped. And that there's a team at the hospital that we always have a code team, so that's not unusual, but a team of people who respond to these emergencies who are trained to intubate a patient, which means putting a tube down their throat so they can be put on a ventilator. And so every hour or two you would have an overhead page for that purpose. But otherwise, it just was a weird day, because I'm used to when I'm at the hospital just being around large groups of people from different sort of disciplines, all day. And it wasn't like that.
Celine, do you, it's people might be confused by, listening to what Governor Cuomo's been saying the last few days, and then listening to the President of the United States yesterday talking about Easter and reopening, etc. Is what's happening in New York right now, is that a preview of what is going to happen other places? Is that is necessarily, or is, are there things about New York that are different in terms of the way the pandemic is hitting New York and that are at this stage still preventable in other large centers in the United States?
Yeah, so I guess I didn't get into this. You know, most of the hospital has been taken over by coronavirus, you know, COVID-19 patients now. We've tried to get everyone out that we possibly could. So it's by and large, that's most of what we're seeing right now. You know, and we are definitely still seeing an increase. In New York, we've seen the doubling time for deaths, so not just cases, but deaths from coronavirus. The doubling time is now 1 day. So in other words, you go from one death on day one to two deaths to four deaths to eight deaths to, you know, you can see how that very rapidly, if it's doubling every day, you know, just spikes up. So that's where things are in New York. And I think part of why we're at such high risk is we are the biggest city by far in the United States. We're actually comparable in size to Wuhan in China, and we're a very dense city. We're, I believe, the densest city in the United States. So when you have an infectious disease that's transmitted by person-to-person transmission, density works against you. So will we see similar transmission in places that are less dense? Well, I know, so I've worked on Indian reservations in different parts of the country, and I hear that they already have cases, for example, on the Navajo Nation. And that's a very rural part of the country. And so clearly population density is not the only predictor here. And, you know, I think if you are not isolated from the rest of the world, you know, I think chances are eventually this is going to hit your community.
Salim, we've got about 2 minutes left. What advice can you give our listeners in Toronto and throughout Canada that can sort of help them in their day-to-day when trying to social distance and avoid as best they can this virus?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, and I don't know exactly how people are viewing this in Canada, if it's the same as here, but I would say take it seriously. And I think there's this idea of, oh, only old people and people with chronic medical diseases, medical illnesses are going to have severe consequences, and that's not true. I saw people as young as their 20s when I was at the hospital the other day. They are ending up on ventilators with very severe critical illness. And it's so that's part of it. But then also we know that a lot of the transmission is being propagated by younger people. And so maybe you're like, well, that's not my problem. You know, that all these other people can do what they can to protect themselves. Well, it's a bit more complicated than that, right? Because the economic consequences, you are going to suffer, even if you're not touched directly by the disease. And so some might say, well, okay, so isn't that an argument for reopening the economy? Well, you can't reopen an economy like that when your hospital system, your health system is completely collapsing as a result of this, when you have hundreds, thousands of people dying per day, which is well what we may reach if we continue on this slope before too long. And it also creates massive distrust in government. So for people to expect an economy to go back to normal in that setting, I just don't see it. So take it seriously, stick to your household family bubble. Nothing goes in or out of the bubble. That's kind of how I think about it.